it's time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
And it's great to have you with us on this Tuesday edition of the show. We got your NFL weekend leftovers coming up in about 10 minutes. Matt Verderam in 20 minutes, SI NFL insider, also host of the Matt Verderam Show on Patreon. Some baseball and something to consider. I think a Disney movie ending is kind of being written in baseball. We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. Hopefully it is. It'd be a great story for the city of Detroit. Also, odds and ends today. CBS put out a list of their top coaches, from 1 to 30. And in my opinion, everybody at CBS on the basketball side should be ashamed of themselves. We'll talk about that. Kurt Heelan, they are not. But first, we say hello to our friend Sam Yarnell, who joins us each and every day on the show. All right, Sam. Eagles get clipped. Home loss to the Falcons in a game that, look, through the first, 57 minutes, I don't think anybody thought we'd be talking about an Eagles team that loses this game, yet somehow Nick Sirianni's team finds a way to lose a game late. You've got the decision to throw on third down instead of run the football. Saquon Barkley drops it after playing a great game for this team, a great first two games for this team. And then you allow Kirk Cousins to go untouched in the pocket on the game-winning drive, what winds up being the game-winning drive. You get the interception from Jalen Hurts to finish it. And we're talking about an Eagles team that instead of 2-0 going into week three and feeling good about themselves, the same old questions about this team and the ability to finish.
Yeah, and I know, Jason, that the Nick Sirianni narrative is one that everyone wants to perpetuate, and sure, that's the easy way to go after this. The fact of the matter is, in this game, as much as Philadelphia Eagles fans don't want to admit it, as much as maybe the NFL media doesn't want to admit it, the fact of the matter is Saquon Barkley lost them this game. In one play, he did. But it was perfect execution. It was the right play call. He had eons of daylight in front of him, and he dropped a 3-yard screen pass. That's not something that can happen in the National Football League, let alone in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter in the National Football League. It's not acceptable. And Saquon Barkley, like you said, has been really great for the majority of his Eagles tenure so far. The historic game down in Brazil, and until that moment last night, he was probably arguing with Alvin Kamara for maybe best running back in the league through 2 weeks. And then that happened. And you're reminded of, I'm sure you were, scarred from the times that happened in a Giants uniform. This is a repeated history with Saquon Barkley of not being able to catch short passes. So, sure, Nick Sirianni shouldn't have been playing prevent defense as strongly as he can. I guess you can argue when the other team has 75 yards to go in 40 seconds. You should have called a blitz, or I guess blitzed more than three guys. But at the end of the day, if you're one of the best running backs in the league, you've got to make that catch and ice the game for your team.
You do, but there are so many reasons why it's the wrong play call. Despite the fact that he drops the ball and it looks like it's drawn up correctly, and it is. The run there is still the right call because you could run it on third down. And even if you don't get it, it's third and four. You get 3 yards. You're still going to tush push it. So you're still going to run off more clock. You're still going to force them to burn time. To me, it makes no sense. There's a million things that could go wrong on a pass play, as was evident by the fact that Saquon Barkley dropped the ball. Whereas if you just hand it off, you cuddle that thing, the game's over. I mean, you're going to win the football game if you run it twice. So to me, you have to believe there has to be blame placed on Sirianni in that spot. And when there is a consistent narrative, and I think a fair narrative, about this team's lack of execution late in games, you're only lending more credence to that when you try to be the smartest guy in the room. Not to mention the fact that early in the game, They should have kicked the field goal. They don't. And don't tell me, well, 52% of analytics says he's supposed to... Bah, 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 bah. I've gone through this a million times. Sometimes you got to play a game on field. Get the points on the board at that point. And the game probably is playing out different at that point in the fourth quarter. To me, it's a Sirianni blown call. He did not put his team in the best position to succeed because running the football there twice is the way to win the game. That said, I agree with you. Barkley has to make that catch. There's no getting around the fact that Barkley has to make that catch. Doesn't mean it's the right decision, though. It's like when guys bring in the wrong pitcher or take out a starting pitcher who's pitching really well and the reliever comes in and he still winds up getting the final out and they get out of the inning. It's still fair to say it may not have been the right decision, even though they got out of it.
So just one thing with regard to running the ball twice. So if you run the ball twice there, you give Atlanta the ball back with a minute to go, only needing a field goal to tie it.
No, they're going to get the first down, though.
In a minute and 5 seconds.
Sam, they're not going to get a first down?
The most time they could have taken off the play clock, even if it were the longest rush and then tush push in history, we'll call it a minute and 7 seconds. No, not even. We'll call it 47 seconds because a play's not going to last more than 3.5 seconds each. That gives the Falcons still, with the deduction of the entirety of the play clock one time, because obviously the clock would stop after fourth down, that still gives the Falcons over a minute to just go down to kick a field goal.
Sam,
I can't get there to just have a 3-point lead.
Sam, hold on. You don't think they're gonna get two first down? You don't think they're gonna get a first down there? On 3rd and 4?
Not the way that they were moving the ball on that drive.
They were running it at will.
3 minutes.
They were running it at will. They could have, they're going to get the first down there. They're going to get the first down there. You have to run the football in that spot. You cannot stop the clock. You cannot run the risk of stopping the clock when Atlanta's only got, you know, whatever they had left for timeouts at that point. You cannot stop the clock in that spot. It's just it's the wrong decision. Even if Barkley catches the ball, you could still make the argument that it's the wrong decision, even though it played out well. We see that in sports all the time, where teams make the wrong decisions and it still winds up playing out in their favor. I mean, it happens plenty. And again, Barkley's got to make the catch. I'm not disagreeing with you, and he should take blame, and I think he did a stand-up job doing that. But for Nick Sirianni, late in that game, another one of those moments for him. Again, they're going to be judged based on what they do in the postseason, so it doesn't really matter. And they're going to win that division because we all know what that division is. Still, not a great moment in week two.
Commanders,
we're coming back.
Lead it.
Coming up in 10 minutes, Matt Verderam hangs out with us. SI's NFL insider. Also get his thoughts on the game we just discussed. The Monday Night Football thriller with Atlanta coming from behind late to beat the Eagles. But there is other NFL news, Sam Yarnell. Week two, weekend leftovers. Everything we didn't get to yesterday on the show or ran out of time because all we get is an hour with you guys every day. All right, Sam, let's start with the news in Carolina. Dave Canales deciding that, yeah, this whole Bryce Young thing isn't working out so badly that they've decided to go to Andy Dalton, 36-year-old former Bengals quarterback, Andy Dalton. I always think he'll always be a Bengals quarterback to me. What are we to make of this decision? Is it the end for Bryce Young? Will he get another opportunity somewhere else? I think he will. But it's certainly not going to be, unless there's an injury to Dalton, it doesn't sound like it's going to be in Carolina.
Jason, this was objectively the funniest possible news that could have come out of week two. The Carolina Panthers, an organization of historic disarray since ruining the career of former Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Cam Newton en route to a Super Bowl loss. Has been, again, like I said, complete disarray.
what is so funny? You okay?
You spent the number one overall pick on a guy, and it's so funny. If you remember back to that draft when they got Bryce Young, last year, there was a lot of debate going into the draft about who you should take, Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. And we're a year later, and they've benched Bryce Young, and CJ Stroud is leading one of the more formidable offenses in the National Football League for a Houston Texans team who was, let me remind you, in about the same place the Panthers were, who have completely turned it around and become immediate playoff contenders coming off a division win in their quarterback's rookie season. Let me tell you, folks, this just speaks so much to how much drafting a quarterback really matters. This can't be the end of Bryce Young. I mentioned the stat yesterday, and you made the remark. It's so funny. It was like foreshadowing. The stat about Baker and Sam Darnold and how bad they were in Carolina and how good they've been since they left.
Yep.
It may be a Carolina thing. But Jason, you can't spend a number one overall pick on a quarterback, bench him a year later, and not plan to give him the keys to the offense back in just a couple of weeks.
No, I would agree with that. And you know what? I'll actually give credit to the organization, because so many times teams will say, hey, we're going down with the ship. We're gonna ride it out for another year. I give them credit for at least trying to give some hope to that locker room, some hope to that fan base that you could actually be competitive. And basically right now they're not competitive. And whether that's the offensive line woes, the team around them, the disarray, three head coaches, blah, 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 blah. They have to try something. You cannot simply quit on the season in week three. And I actually think it's the opposite. I don't think this is quitting on the season. I think this is, we just got to try something to spark this team and get a win.
Let me ask you something crazy, because this crazy thought popped into my head.
Yeah.
And just a funny exercise. So in this hypothetical, let's say that Tua does in fact decide or is told that football is no longer an option for him. In the next couple of weeks, we get a decision from Tua. Hey, I'm going to call it a career, guys. This has been good. If you are the Miami Dolphins, one, do you call the Carolina Panthers? And two, if you're the Carolina Panthers, what do you need for Bryce Young, who you just spent a number one overall pick on a year ago?
A bucket of towels? What do you need? What are you going to get? I mean, realistically, what are you going to get? I don't think the Dolphins go that route. I still think there's other guys they can go and potentially trade for. It can't be
and then wait in a draft.
You can't. It's very hard to sell that to your fan base if you're Miami, a guy that can't get out of his own way. That would be tough to sell. I got a couple other stories I want to get to, so let me ask you this real quick. Next, because I'm going to ask this of Matt Verderam too. Next starting quarterback to lose his job, who is it?
It's a tough one, but it's hard not to say Deshaun at this point. Wow. Just because of everything around him. I do think it'll be Deshaun Watson. We are a pro Jameis Winston program. I think that is fair enough to say at this point. That guy is fun to watch in the National Football League. So I'd love to see him get another opportunity. Give me Deshaun Watson as the next benched quarterback.
Isaiah Pacheco. I know, lost for like 6 to 8 weeks with an ankle injury here. I think the Chiefs are going to be fine. I was talking about it off air with our guest, Matt Verderam, who will join us coming up in 10 minutes. We were chatting off the air in the virtual green room. And I think they're going to be fine, mainly because the division they play in, you know, you've got six wins that you feel like are kind of, you know, five or six wins that you can guarantee on your schedule. If this were a season-ending injury, I think I'd be a little more concerned. But I think the Chiefs will be fine in the interim. And they got through the first 2 weeks, which was really the tough part of their schedule. And could argue they're really not even playing their best football yet.
I will agree with you that they will be fine, and I will one-up you to say that even if it were a season-ending injury, I still think they would be fine. Listen, what was the entire story of the Chiefs last year? It was they had no weapons, but they still were able to win the Super Bowl. That's the story of this team as far as they go. And also, we know Carson Steele's got some sort of juice. He looked really good in the preseason, and fantasy football owners out there are all too familiar with him at this point. And don't forget, they've still got, I know it's been a while, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire is on the PUP list. He'll be back by week five. So I'm not panicking at all on the Chiefs. They're still going to win a ton of games, and you're exactly right about the division.
Niners without Christian McCaffrey already. Now without Deebo Samuel. Fair question to ask. Do you start looking at other teams potentially that can win that division? Seahawks plus 300.
100%. I would get in on the Arizona Cardinals because they're starting to hit their stride. You saw it this past week. Listen, we know what Brock Purdy is without one of his All-Pros. Now we're going to see what he is without two of his All-Pros. I don't trust the 49ers at all.
Cardinals at plus 600. Seahawks at 300, Cardinals at 6, Rams at 1,300. Niners still
Cardinals
minus 165.
Before the Deebo news, were plus 900.
All right, let's keep the NFL conversation moving forward on this Tuesday edition of Sports Wrap. Say hello to Matt Verderam. SI does a terrific job on the NFL. Insider there. Also host of the Matt Verderam Show, available through Patreon. We were just talking about it off air. Congratulations on all the success, my friend. So, success for you. Not so much for the Eagles late last night, huh? I mean, wow. I mean, it felt like the story, and I heard Scott Van Pelt talk about it in the post game a little bit. Like, the story was written. Even though the game was close, yeah. I don't think anybody ever felt that Atlanta would get over the hump in that game based on what we saw over the first, 55 minutes or so. And then all of a sudden, they're marching down the field with ease. Prevent defense prevents you from winning. We say it all the time. They can't get a hand on Kirk Cousins. And before you know it, they're in the end zone. And even still, there was enough time for Jalen Hurts and the Eagles to get a game-winning field goal opportunity. He throws the pick late, and obviously we know how it all finishes. Give me your thoughts, Matt, on what we saw on Monday night in Philadelphia.
Look, Saquon Barkley dropped a pass that would have sealed the game. I'm also, and maybe some will feel this is unfair, but this is how I see this game. I Nick Sirianni's got to take blame for this game. There is no way you lose this football game. And I just pulled it up, but you're asking the question. I want to be 100% right with this. So with a minute 46 to go in the game, it is 3rd and 3 at Atlanta's 10-yard line. You have rushed the ball all night down Atlanta's. Atlanta couldn't stop Saquon Barkley to save their own lives. There's nothing they could do. He ran for 95 yards, 4.3 yards per attempt. Hurts ran for 85 yards. I mean, Atlanta was like me trying to defend the run. Okay, there was no hope. And you also know this. It's 3rd and 3, but you only need 2. Because if you get the 4th and 1, you just push forward, game's done, right? So you can run the ball, and unless you go out of bounds or take a penalty, there's a minute left. And if you get the first down, the game's over, you kneel on it. If you get the 4th and 1, the game's over, you push it and you kneel on it. Like, why are you throwing the ball? And I know he's wide open. Like, I get it. He has to catch the ball. That's fine. But that's the risk of throwing the football. Like, that can happen. Guys drop passes sometimes. I don't understand for the life of me what the hell they were doing. I don't get it. And so then you kick the field goal to go up 6, which, by the way, you would have been up 9 had you kicked the field goal earlier in the game.
I crushed them on social media when that happened.
It's like, same in the moment. I was like, this is stupid. Good Lord, kick a field goal. It's fine. Not everything has to end in 7 points. And you lose the game. You know, there's a lot of blame go around. The pass rush was terrible, and that's all true. And the coverage was, like, their defense stinks. Okay, their defense is going to give up 9 points this year. But to me, that game is as simple as run the ball on 3rd and 3 when you rush for 180 yards on the night, and they didn't do it, and it cost them the game.
Here's the good news for them. They're still going to win that division. I mean, there isn't anything I've seen in the first 2 weeks that convinces me Dallas is the real deal. We all know what the Giants are, even though they probably would have beaten the Commanders this weekend if they had a kicker. And we kind of know what Washington is. I still feel like Philadelphia is going to win that division. And ultimately, they'll be judged on how far they don't go in the postseason. That's going to dictate what happens with Sirianni. Obviously, nothing's going to happen midseason unless it goes terribly off the rails. But flip it to Atlanta for a second. I'm dying to know what you think because, I mean, we're all watching sort of through the first game in three quarters and going, how big of a disaster is this with Kirk Cousins? And all of a sudden on that final drive, a guy that for much of the early part and middle part of his career struggled in primetime, boy, he could not have looked more primetime. He got into a rhythm, aided by the fact that there was no pass rush. He was able to get into a rhythm, and Kirk Cousins played really well in the final 2 minutes of that game. Now, is that fool's gold that people are going to get excited about and think, hey, you know, we found it and we're going to be fine? Right. Or does it sort of unlock this Atlanta offense?
I think it's combination. So confidence breeds winning, and they should have confidence now. Like, they took the ball. They had, I think it was 5 possessions in the second half. They scored 2 touchdowns. They had 2 field goals. I believe, if I'm right with that, either that or they 3 possessions and scored 4 times. Either way, they scored 3 times in 4 possessions. They had 2 touchdowns and a field goal. They should feel better about themselves because, look, if you lose that game, you're 0-2 going to play Kansas City, right? I mean, and now all of a sudden you are facing the questions of if they lose this game, does Penix start to play and all these different things. That's off the table now. Even if they lose to the Chiefs, okay, you're 1-2. You're not buried. You're fine.
Especially
you're
in that division. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You don't have that looming specter of, oh my God, if we lose this game, what happens? Now, in the Philly game, what Cousins throws for $171 all night and then throws for 70 yards on the final drive of the game. And I'm not taking anyone away from Cousins because he came up big and he made some nice throws, a couple explosive plays to Mooney. They're wide open. It was just, there's no pressure, no coverage. And I mean, it was, but if you're Atlanta, look, you brought Cousins in there because you weren't getting anything out of Desmond Ridder and you weren't getting anything out of Taylor Heinicke. And the end of Matt Ryan's career, he was at that point a scarecrow. Like, you weren't getting anything. So Cousins gave you what you wanted last night. He gave you a real quarterback who could drive a team down the field when they needed it. Look, I did not watch the Falcons last night and walk away from that being like, wow, I'm super impressed by Atlanta. Like, I think Atlanta is kind of like maybe a 500 type team, but I do think that that game could be a springboard because it'll give them some confidence in what they can do.
I'm kind of surprised Kyle Pitts has not been more of a role, especially down in the red zone. I keep waiting. I thought Kirk Cousins could kind of unlock Kyle Pitts and Kyle Pitts could be an option for Kirk Cousins. And it just hasn't happened yet.
Well, you know, Kyle Pitts is one of these guys, and I don't mean this against Kyle Pitts, because he's played with no quarterbacks his first year. He had 1,000 yards as a rookie and pretty much has done nothing since then. Like, nothing. Okay? In 10 games in 2022, he had 356 yards. Last year, he played all 17 games. He had 667 yards. And now, in 2 games, he has 6 catches for 46 yards. Like, at some point, is it not on Kyle Pitts a little bit? Like, I mean, now, look, I'm not maybe there in the sense of, like, he might have, you know, his next 3 games might be 100-yard games. I mean, he's playing Kansas City next week, who can't stop any tight ends. So, I mean, that might be his breakout game. But I do think you're right, like, to the point of, listen, they need him to be a breakout player. Because Drake London is a good receiver, but he's not Justin Jefferson. Like, he's not just going to go out there and win the game by himself. So they need another weapon. And if it's not Kyle Pitts, yeah, you got Bijan, who's awesome. Mm-hmm. Bijan is the bell cow of the offense. Yeah. But after that, it's like Drake and then who if Kyle Pitts doesn't step up.
More with Matt Verderam, some more NFL notes to get into. Bryce Young, too. All right. Continuing the conversation with Matt Verderam, SI's NFL insider, one of their NFL insiders, also host of the Matt Verderam Show over on Patreon. If you have not gone and checked that out, well, go and do so. The dude's got bills to pay. Let's go.
Right.
You know, that yacht ain't paying for itself, Matt Verderam.
Somebody else is paying for the yacht. Not me.
Before I get to Bryce Young, let me ask you about the Tua stuff. So he's already decided, like, no matter what these concussion specialists say, these neurologists say, he's coming back. He's going to keep playing. There's this outcry that some of it kind of beneath the surface, some of it above. You heard what Antonio Pierce said last week. Is there anybody that can protect Tua from himself, or is he just convinced that he can just kind of power through this? Because I said this yesterday on the show, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I think he's going to be, you know, post the concussion movie with Will Smith, in this new world where we really are dialed in and know a lot more about the impacts of concussions, he really is going to be patient zero for how we study guys after their career, during their career, post-career. It feels like to me he's going to be that guy that we really study and see what life for him is like after all this head trauma.
I mean, I definitely worry about his post-NFL future. But I will say this. I think, you know, he's got to have conversations with his family. And if they feel that he wants to keep playing, they're good with him playing, then he can play. I mean, he understands the risks. He gets it. And if he wants to put himself out there, fine. Now, I will say this. If you're the NFL, if you're the Dolphins, you are holding your breath every time he gets hit. Because the NFL doesn't want that optic. Let's just be honest about it. The NFL doesn't want the optic of him in the fencing position on national TV. And a lot of these concussions with them have happened on national television. The Packers game was on Christmas. The Bengals game was a Thursday night. This game was a Thursday night. Everybody's watching this game, right? And so these have been very much like in the moment, everybody's seeing these concussions. I am not going to be the guy who sits here and says, he's got to retire. I get it. He's worked his whole life to play in the NFL, and he wants to keep playing. And I you know what? If I was 26, 27 years old in his shoes, I can't say I wouldn't do the same thing, but it is scary. And you do wonder at some point here. I know it's hard to think if he plays another 10 years, he's not going to have another concussion. I mean, just based on what we've seen.
He's going to have one in another 10 weeks.
So that's the question I have is, let's say he comes back whenever that is, and in a month after he gets another concussion, if you're the Dolphins, do you just shut him down? Like, that's where, you know, it gets taken out of his hands. But you and I both know this business. Like, the Dolphins are going to look at it like, well, does he give us a better chance to win than Skylar Thompson? And the answer is yes. And so if he wants to play, I would think they're just going to keep playing him. But yeah, it's scary. I mean, he's had a lot of concussions in a short period of time.
Bryce Young is out as starting quarterback in Carolina. They go to Andy Dalton for week 3. Are you surprised with how quickly they made the move?
Yes, but I think it's the right move. I'm surprised because David Tepper wanted Bryce Young, and he is the owner of the team. And David Tepper, in case anyone hasn't realized, is a little bit impulsive. And has a little bit of a finger on the scale, if you will. I think it just got to a point where Dave Canales, and I even think to some degree here Tepper, but probably more Canales, just said, look, this is untenable. We can't win games like this. This is impossible. And we're going to lose the room. Like, if you're Dave Canales, you're a brand new head coach or a first-time head coach, you have to build credibility, you have to build clout. You can't play that kid and sit there and look at the other 52 guys on the team and go, yeah, we're trying to win games. I don't say this to sound, you know, over the top or bearish or mean on him. Bryce Young is atrocious. I mean, there's no other way to say this. He can't play. He's completing under 60% of his passes, and every pass he throws is 2 yards after the line of scrimmage. I mean, it's not like he bombs away and he's completing, you know, his career percentage of 59.3. He's thrown 11 touchdowns and 13 picks in his career. And I understand the whole, hey, he's had 3 head coaches.
Offensive line is atrocious.
Oh, it's awful. It's like, look, he's in an awful situation. Like, you're not getting any argument. But when you watch him, like, he can't play. I mean, he just simply cannot play. They are better off just admitting it to themselves now. And if they go 2-15 again, hey, guess what? At least you have your pick this time. Go get Carson Beck. You know, go get whoever that guy is, you know, Ewers or Milrow, whoever it ends up being. There's no, to me, what is the argument that Bryce Young is the future in Carolina? Yeah. I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I've got about a minute here. Who's the next starting quarterback to lose his job?
Daniel Jones. And I know it pains you. But
it really does. I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
I just think, like, look, when you look around, like, who's the other guy, right? Like, I don't think any of these...
Yeah, but who are they going to play that's better than him? It's not like you have Tyrod Taylor anymore.
No, nobody. But they're going to do it because fans are just going to lose their minds, and he's going to get booed off the field 8,000 times in MetLife until they do it. Like, I mean, Bo Nix by his play would be the answer, but they're not going to yank Bo Nix. For what? For Jared Stidham or Zach Wilson? You can't. Like, what, you know as well as I do, once you start that guy... You're playing him. You can't revert course now. You got to play him. And so, look, I think it's going to be Jones. And I think Jones is gone after this year. Ugh.
Giants are a mess. And they still could have won that game this weekend. That's the worst part about it. And boy, by the way, I'm out of time, but the Bears better figure out a way to protect Caleb Williams, too, because he took too many hits game. On Sunday night. I got to go. Love talking with Matt Verderam. Does a great job, SI. Catch a show over on Patreon as well, the Matt Verderam Show. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. No problem.
Sports Wrap moves to segment 5 with odds and ends right around the corner to wrap up the show. Something to consider. Oh, look, it's Sam Yarnell. Something to consider. All right, Sam Yarnell. Something to consider. The Detroit Tigers writing a potential storybook finish to this 2024 Major League Baseball season. I'll tell you a funny story. So I'm now the Tigers are like my cause celeb, right? So I'm watching, you know, I'm doing the scoreboard watching stuff. And last night I get in and the Tigers are down like 3-0 to the Royals. I'm like, oh, all right, they're going to lose this game. Lose ground to the Royals and lose ground to the Twins. The Twins were up, I think, like 4-1 on the Guardians. And I'm thinking, all right, I mean, there it is. It's a wrap. Then I turn around. I get an alert on my phone. Tigers, magical comeback. And I'm like, what? They win. The Twins lose. Guardians get a 2-run home run in the 8th inning in Cleveland to beat the Twins, and Detroit comes from behind to beat the Royals 8-7, I think was the final. And here we are. The Detroit Tigers are 2 games out of the final wild card spot right now, also making up ground on the Royals. Boy, what a wild finish it would be if this Tigers team that was basically left for dead by management, they didn't do anything to improve themselves at the deadline, they were sellers, if anything, find themselves in a position to potentially make the playoffs. I think it'd be a great story.
Jason, August 22nd, less than a month ago, they were 9.5 games out of the last wild card spot. Wow. They've gained 7 games in the standings in just under a month. That is insane. Yeah. That's crazy. Not even under a month, like 3 weeks. That's crazy. They're becoming America's heartthrob in baseball, right? Like these Detroit Tigers who it felt like yet another ultimatum year for them. By the way, funny Tigers stat that I saw that doesn't speak to them being America's heartthrob, but Luis Arraez yesterday struck out for the first time in 141 at-bats. Yeah. In his last 141 at-bats, Javier Baez has struck out 64 times. Hilarious stat. Regardless, though, the Tigers are this heartthrob team that you've wanted to root for yeah. so long. It's like the Buffalo Bills of baseball. So, yeah, great story. I love the Tigers. I'll be rooting for
them. Yeah, and again, the schedule is favorable. If you go look at the rest of their schedule, Tigers schedule right now. Let's see here. I'm going to pull this up live on the show because what looks better than a host typing on television? They've got the Royals for two more. Then they're in Baltimore against the Orioles. for three, then home for the Rays, home for the White Sox to finish. Sets up well. I mean, if they could get through that Orioles series, you know, don't go and get swept by the Orioles. I mean, it's there for them. What's the, you know what? I meant to look this up real quick here. I'll do this live in real time. Let's see. What's their number to make the playoffs right now? Division winners, AL Central. That's not going to happen. But to make the playoffs.
The Tigers to make the playoffs are plus 415 right now. To miss the playoffs, minus 670.
Oh, my God. Plus 415. I think I got to do it. I think I got to run to, I think I got to run over to Durango and place that bet.
You haven't registered with one of the mobile Vegas apps yet?
Would you believe it? I have not. Would you believe that? I have not.
I would, because it is a hassle.
It is a hassle. It is not easy.
No, it's not. And it's not meant for people who aren't residents to do. I learned that the hard way. But now that you're a resident, you should definitely do it, because then, you know, you could be placing bets from your living room instead of having to walk down to one of the casinos.
That may not be a good thing, though. You know what else might not be a good thing? Mike Trout leaving the outfield. Say it isn't so, Joe. They're talking about it. Trout saying he may abandon center field when he comes back to play next year. Where's he playing? First base?
He'll DH. Well, yeah, I guess he'll be a first baseman DH. Too. But insanely sad story here, because Mike Trout, I mean, those of us who grew up watching Mike Trout, remember that he is an incredible defender. He is a plus-plus defender in center field who continues to make outstanding, spectacular catches. So this season, he did DH a little even this season, Jason. But defensively, this is a guy who year in and year out has had advanced metrics in the top 15, top 10 of baseball in terms of his position. So it's very sad to see, you know, another example of injuries ravaging his career.
It almost is reminiscent in a way, the hitter version of Sandy Koufax. Everybody knows how great Sandy Koufax was, a Hall of Fame pitcher, but it was a shortened career because of injuries. Obviously, elbow. If they had had Tommy John back when he was a pitcher, he would have been a candidate, and he would have been able to be somebody that had a longer career. Obviously, that didn't exist then. But for Mike Trout, it kind of feels like Sandy Koufax in that he'll be a Hall of Famer, but we'll always wonder what it could have been when it comes to Mike Trout as opposed to what it was. It's kind of sad, but it's kind of what we're left with. Now, what the final chapter of his career looks like. Never gets to a World Series, barely plays in the postseason. Kind of is what it is. Odds and ends are right around the corner, Sam. We're going to get into some NBA coaching rankings. And Bubba Watson, relegated! Okay, just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Tuesday. Don't forget, if you miss anything from Sports Wrap, anything at all, we have something called the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. And it's available on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Odyssey. We're on all of them. Just go and check it out. Subscribe. Give it a like. Leave a comment if you want. I'm okay. I can handle it. All right. Without any further delay, Sam Yarnell, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, the end of sanity. Over at CBS when it comes to the basketball department. My God, who thought it was a good idea to let this crew put together a list of the top 30 NBA head coaches and put Greg Popovich as a number 14 ranked head coach? Greg Popovich. Now, hold on. It gets better, because Greg Popovich is 14, but Mike Brown is 13? Mike Brown? Tom Thibodeau? who I love, but has never won a damn thing in his life. Mike Budenholzer, one title. Ime Udoka, no titles. I mean, I don't understand. I as soon as you put Greg Popovich at number 14 for me, your list loses all credibility. Credibility.
Jason, they had the reigning coach of the year behind Ty Lue. I mean, this list is ridiculous. The only thing that they got right is that Eric Spoelstra is number one in a tier of his own. Yes. That we can all agree on. Outside of that, what are we doing to the highest degree? Nick Nurse is number two?
Nick Nurse.
Somebody
call it. Somebody call the cops. Somebody's been robbed.
A loss for words. Jason sent me this article. Mark Daniel,
the coach of the Thunder, is number six. Will Hardy. I mean, what are we doing here? What are we doing?
Chris
Finch.
When Jason sent me this article in prepping for the show, as we do each and every day, I really thought it was satirical.
Michael Malone is 15.
I looked through the list and I was like, there's no way that saw this is like an Onion article or something. Maybe it was BCS Sports or something. SBC Sports.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, this was hard to believe. Also, Joe Mazzulla, the reigning defending NBA champions head coach outside 11. The top 10.
He's behind Tom Thibodeau.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
I had to bring it up. I'm sure there are wonderful people over there at CBS, but wow.
Also, I also didn't, this is very niche, but the coach of the Raptors, Darko Rajakovic, I believe that's how you pronounce it. They ranked him 26th. He was in contention for Coach of the Year for a period of time last year. I get that we have only seen one season of him, but I feel like he's proven himself more than the fourth worst coach in the league.
J.J. Redick, number 30, by the way. Don't think that's not going up on a poster board somewhere. J.J. Redick is number 30. All right, Sammy Arnell. Odds and ends. The end for Bubba Watson when it comes to live golf. All right, pump the brakes. Maybe not so fast. But he has been relegated because he's played so poorly this year with LIV, which means he has to kind of beg his way with Greg Norman to stay on the tour. Otherwise, he has to go and like play some, you know, South Asian events or something like that. Go play a tournament in Bali or something like that. Doesn't look good for Bubba Watson, who I think is like 46 years old now. And probably, yeah, and you know what the funny part is? Every year when the Masters comes around, you think about Bubba Watson always having a shot because his game just plays so well on that course. He's going to be one of those guys that'll always have a chance when it comes to the Masters because of how he plays at Augusta National and obviously having won the green jacket there a couple of times. But, man, I mean, you're Bubba Watson. You can't even make it on the LIV Tour right now. You got to kind of wonder where your game is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He will be back next season because he's Bubba Watson.
They need the name power.
And there's a clause in his contract that literally states if you get relegated, we can undo it because you're Bubba Watson. Or as they put it, business reasons. But yeah, finishing outside the top 48 on like the second tier world tour of golf. It is not a great look for a two-time Masters champion, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Definitely two-time major champion. Bubba, I think, has kind of become the embodiment, Jason, of what you and I talked about when the whole LIV thing first started, when you and I were just starting this show. Take the big check. Mail it in. There you go. Live your life. It's like an early retirement. It's like retiring from professional golf in professional golf.
John Rahm, by the way, won the LIV Golf Championship this weekend. So congratulations to him. He won something.
Oh, he must have had a really good season then, right?
Gonna wrap it up for us. Thank you to our friend Matt Verderam. Thanks to you, Sam. We'll see y'all back here on Wednesday. Another edition of Sports Wrap then. See ya.